Good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to our second really evocation of the presence of Goddess Lalita Tripura Sundari. And today we are going to be practicing with the Sri Chakra, the Sri Yantra. And so I'm going to ask you, if you haven't downloaded it, if it's possible for you where you're sitting, to go to the website and click on the picture of the Sri Chakra, which is on the website, because at a certain point in the class, we're going to be going through it, and it's way easier to follow if you actually have a picture. So hopefully you will have found that for yourself. And I also want to say that this is to put it mildly, a very crazy time to be immersing ourselves in the beautiful, one of the beautiful goddesses, because all over the state of California where I live, there are wildfires burning. In your part of the world, it may be pouring rain. There are people being evacuated from their homes. Lives are unraveling. The news is full of all kinds of upheaval. And if you look at this world as the play of goddess in different forms, there is no question that the fierce Shaktis, Kali and Bhairavi and Murugan and the other goddesses who preside over the, let's say, the more chaotic and difficult manifestations of life are very much at play. And that all of us, especially all of us human beings, I don't know if this goes for the earth, which has a different trajectory, but there is no question that we are in an initiatory cycle here. That is, that in many respects, and many of us are actually living inside an initiatory cycle that involves a kind of a death and rebirth process. So we are definitely inside the, let's call it the dissolution part, the samhara part. And yet what we understand as Shaktas, as lovers of goddess, speaking for myself anyway, is that permeating it all, undulating throughout all these different colors and forms in which the goddesses manifest on the physical plane, threading through this all of this is the beautiful face of goddess as Lalita, as Tripura Sundari, the beautiful one who is always transcending her activities and the various kalas or aspects of herself which play as the world. And she's always trying to open us to her presence, whether she flows through scary goddesses or their manifestations in the world, or through beautiful goddesses. So I want to start with a couple of poems. One is from Hafiz, that is Hafiz in a translation by Daniel Lindinsky. And the other is from Tasha Silver, who is a very beautiful contemporary Kali lover who writes magnificent poetry. So here's Hafiz. Whenever anything touches or enters your body, never say it is not me. For goddess is just trying to get close. I have no use for divine patience. My lips are now burning and everywhere. I am running from every corner of this earth and sky, wanting to kiss you. And here's Tasha. This poem is called The Kiss. Since the divine will never be closer than she is in this moment, her kiss never waits until you find your soulmate, have a baby, or adopt that stray dog. No need to discover the perfect handstand or hope that Venus might finally submit to Mars. No need to grow more worthy, burn extra sage, or light one more flame. Her lips descend when the torrid lust for future and past expires in a fit of pure exhaustion, and you bless this very moment as it is, casting your full-on gaze to the one long waiting, and just say, now. So let's say now. Let's say that her kiss, her presence, reveals itself in precisely these moments when we can say, okay, I'm just here, present with whatever is, pleasant or difficult, comfortable or uncomfortable. So let's take this inner stance now to recognize that there is no place else we have to be. There is nothing else we have to do. And to let go of whatever awaits us in the future, including the future that unfolds after this conversation that we're having, whatever I might have been hanging on to in the past. And you can begin by sensing into the presence of all of us in this community, this kula, whether you're here live or listening on the webcast or listening to the MP3 download a day or so later, it's still real time. And your connection, by some miracle, which I can't say I understand, but which is at the very heart of the way Goddess threads through the universe, she's present in these words that we share together and in the space created by our connection. So let's recognize her kissing us from outside and inside. And with that, we will begin to chant. So you can find your chant sheets. Find yourself a posture which is both comfortable and upright, or if you're lying down, at least having the spinal column straight. Let the breath begin to flow very naturally and easily. And as we chant, we're going to have the feeling that the words of the chant are flowing out of the heart so that we are actually worshiping the goddess, in the form of words. The practice of chanting, of mantra practice itself, is arguably the most immediate way of touching Goddess with our lips, touching Goddess with our tongue. So there's really enormous power in becoming one-pointed to these chants. Ati madhura chapa hastam aparimita modabana saubhagyam aruna matisa chakaranam abhinavakula sundarim vande 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 om guyati guya goptri tvam nasmat kritam bhavatu me devi tvat prasadam maheshwari. Those last words mean, you are the most secret of the secret. Please bless the recitation of mantras in your name. The goddess Lalita is described in the 1,000 names of the Lalita Sahasranam and in the Lalita Trishati, which we listened to last week at the beginning of the class, which describes her in 300 names. The first name given to her in the Lalita Sahasranam is Mata, meaning mother. And another of her names is Kameshi, the one who is the form of desire. She's the one filled with erotic sentiments, the one who causes emotion. She is the one who enchants, the one who overflows with desire and love. She's the one who gives the fruits of all actions. She's the unmoved witness of all. She's Kundalini Shakti, seated in the Muladhara, rising through the chakras. She is the form of all deities everywhere. She's Mahamaya, the one who creates the magical illusion of the world, and she's also the one who frees us from it. And truly, it is only she who makes it possible to even speak about her. So as we begin, let's ask for her grace so that the words that are spoken are true to her intention, and also that they're heard by each one of you in a way that expands the depth of your connection to your soul, to yourself, and to the brilliance of your emanation as the personality, the name, the history that you call yourself, your empirical being. That, too, is a manifestation of Goddess. Let's begin by creating an altar. As many of you know, at the heart of Goddess practice is ritual. And even though the rituals that we do in honoring Lalita are ultimately done internally, which is what we're going to do now, the creation of an altar is an extremely significant part of the process. In the practice of Sri Vidya, the altar is often the yantra itself, which may be in the form of a metal Meru yantra, as it's called, which is it's called Meru because it rises like a mountain. And in many forms of ritual practice, the Meru yantra is the center of the practice. In other ways of carrying on the Sri Chakra Puja, the person who is performing the puja actually draws the chakra or creates it in colored sand. So the actual creation of the image is an intrinsic part of the process. So we're going to do our own version of it within our hearts. So begin as we do by just letting yourself be present to the air touching your face, to the heaviness of your sits bones and buttocks on the seat, to the presence of the earth beneath you, and to the space that surrounds you from outside, creating the space within which your physical body is held, which also permeates you. This practice of creating an internal altar is actually a process, a practice of what's called mental worship or manasa puja. It's also a quality, a characteristic of pretty much all the great tantric ritual practices. Is that one of the ways we concentrate and one of the ways we change our mind, we transform our inner consciousness, is by filling our mind with forms, with visuals that carry within them the power to make us aware in this moment of the fact that our human imagination, this is a really big sentence and it's a very important truth. Our human imagination is Goddess's imagination. We're the microcosm, she's the macrocosm, but the powers are intrinsic in us. So imagine yourself now at the edge of the field of presence. In other words, it's as though pure presence, pure spaciousness, is stretching out before you and around you. Your eyes are closed, but you have imagined, you've created an internal sense of this field. So whatever thoughts may be arising, just have the sense that you and the thoughts are held inside this vast field of presence. You may be able to imagine it stretching throughout the universe, or maybe just filling the room, or maybe just a couple of feet in front of you or behind you, it's fine. But in that field now, become aware of a table, a surface made of golden light, which is our altar. This table may appear to you as round or square or rectangular, or it may even be edgeless. It's made of golden light, literally liquid golden light. And imagine now that on the table you place a silken cloth. And notice the color of the cloth. Often it's red or blue, but your cloth may be white. Whatever color your imagination wants to create, feel that the inner goddess is creating it. And on the altar, imagine yourself placing a flame inside a luminescent cup. And the cup, the holder, may have an elaborate shape. Perhaps your light is inside a jewel, an emerald, or a ruby, or a sapphire. And if you imagine that your light is held inside a jewel, then you can also see that as the light glows, it sends reflections of jeweled colors all around. Now place beside the candle, beside the flame, another jeweled container holding water, so that you have now on the inner altar these two elements, fire and water. Fire represents sight, the ability to see forms, and it also represents the light that is our true elemental nature. Water represents the quality of taste. And you can now place flowers, and this is one of the places where our imagination can become very powerful. Because it's your imagination, you can imagine roses or jasmine or exotic tropical flowers, or they can be delicate little wildflowers. Just allow yourself to place flowers on your altar. And having prepared the altar, imagine that you're inviting Lalita Tripura Sundari to take her seat in the middle of the altar. And here you may sense her as a very palpable feminine form. You may simply have a felt sense of her presence. Or you might experience her as pure space filled with invisible power. In the temple at Chidambaram in South India, in the central chamber, in the heart of the temple, there's a deity made of space. And when they pull back the curtain to give you darshan of the deity, there's nothing there. You don't see anything. But there's an incredible power that pours out of that empty space and literally gives you darshan. So your goddess may be pure space, pure clarity, pure luminosity. So just allow yourself to offer the breath into the altar of the heart. And as you offer the breath, see if you can allow the breath to mingle with the mantra, Om Aim Hrim Shrim. With every inhalation, you allow the mantra to drop into the altar in the heart, perhaps having the feeling that you're offering it into the lap of the goddess. or into the hands of the goddess. With every exhalation, you experience the satisfaction of the ritual, because in making the offerings to the temple of the heart, to the altar of the heart, we're not just doing something routine or mechanical. In offering flowers to the goddess and offering mantra to the goddess, we're actually kindling our own intrinsic goddess presence, which is joy. So one of the things that I've been speaking about in this class, and that several of you have been communicating on the listserv and in private letters to me, the goddess Lalita Tripura Sundari, although she is everything, and although she encompasses all forms of goddess, including goddesses like Kali and Bhairavi, who are aspects of her, she is also deeply a goddess of Eros. Lalita was originally a fertility goddess, and religious historians say that the qualities of her as a fertility goddess were kind of incorporated into the modern form of Lalita, who is understood to be Sarva Shakti, all Shaktis. But what is significant in thinking of Lalita as a fertility goddess is that she's able to be understood by us as the fundamental energy that fertilizes all of our sensations and feelings, not only through her Maya, not only in the form of the mundane desires and actions that are ordinary in life, but also in the form of the inner experience of Eros, which is the basic feeling of aliveness. The great African-American lesbian poet, Audre Lorde, whose book, Sister Outsider, I just started reading, says a lot about Eros. And she's speaking about Eros as sexuality, but she touches on the greater depth of it. There are many kinds of power, used and unused, acknowledged or otherwise. The erotic is a resource within each of us that lies in a deeply feminine place. It's often been misnamed and used against women. It's been made into the confused, the trivial, the psychotic, the plasticized sensation. And in traditional cultures, such as the traditional cultures of India, the erotic dimension, this is me, this is not Audre Lorde, the erotic dimension of goddess has been not exactly suppressed, but very much held in secret. The Shakta tradition is considered a secret tradition, even though it's very popular, and the Sri Vidya, the practices of Sri Vidya are now known all over the world. So here's Audre Lorde again. The erotic is a measure between the beginnings of our sense of self and the chaos of our strongest feelings. It is an internal sense of satisfaction to which, once we've experienced it, we know we can aspire. For having experienced the fullness of this depth of feeling and recognizing its power, in honor and self-respect, we can require no less of ourselves. This is important because when we are willing to admit our own eros or to experience our own eros, we also take full ownership of our own power. And obviously, this is very revolutionary. In Sri Vidya practice, there's a word, kamakala, which means something like the engine of desire or the space of desire or the part of desire, because kala also is a word which stands for the individual parts that together make up a whole. So kamakala is another name for yoni, and it also is used to describe a sexual practice of left-handed tantra. But in the non-dual sense, the word describes the experience that we have when we have been fully enlivened, when our being has been fully activated. And in the recognition of the, let's call it macrocosmic kamakala, we recognize that the air touching our body is erotic. The hand touching the table is erotic. You know, that the universe itself is erotic. It's an intimate universe whose forms are actually rays. This is one of the images of Sri Yantra. They're actually rays exploding as ecstatic pulsations from the great cosmic yoni in union with the phallus, which exists in the Sahasrara, the highest spiritual center, and as well as in the radically subtle center beyond all forms. When we experience that union, which is one of the highest ecstatic spiritual experiences possible for a human being, perhaps the highest, part of what you discover, what you receive in that process, is that when you open your eyes, when you look out at the world, your vision has been colored by that experience. And I'm saying this from personal experience. I know many of you have had that experience. And my guru described it in the opening pages of his autobiography. He described this open-eyed recognition of the erotic communion of the natural world. So these are his words. Look carefully, look with subtlety. These sun rays, the vines and creepers, surrender to each other in mutual love and sacrificial worship and meet each other with silent speech. What divine music there is in the gently flowing wind, in the coolness of water, in the beauty of the trees and flowers. All this is the love flow of God manifest. So Lalita's forms, Lalita's mantras, and Lalita's geometry all shed this quality into the universe. I've sometimes told the story of how I actually got involved with Lalita Tripura Sundari. It was very much a calling, which is how it happens with her. I had published my Awakening Shakti book, and about 3 months after the book came out, I was sitting in meditation, and I got this message. I got this recognition that it was utterly imperative that I do a formal goddess practice. And it happened to coincide with the arrival in my house of a very large Sri Yantra, a painting, which I had asked the illustrator of my book, Ikabumi Elek, to make for me. I had thought that this Yantra would be, you know, I had a place in my house where I wanted to put it. I was thinking of it as a decorative object. But when it arrived, it was inside a cardboard case, and I had kind of stashed it on the couch in my office, waiting for the time when I would install it. And the day after I received it, I walked into the room and the box itself seemed to say to me, take me out of here and make an altar. I mean, it literally was that clear a message. So I installed the Sri Yantra and I made an altar beneath it. And in the course of time, a friend of mine who's a guru of a Shakta lineage gave me initiation into the pancha, into the mantra of that yantra, which is the mantra, the version that I have of it is Hasakalarim, Hasakalarim, Sakalarim, Shreem. It's a 15-syllable mantra with a syllable added. And I began doing it as a practice along with a chant, the Lalita Trishati. And during this time, I was on retreat. I was doing a 2-month private retreat. So I had a lot of time to do the practice. And one of the experiences that began to arise in me was the experience of a red light that would begin to, would start in my inner body, sometimes in the mind, sometimes in the heart, sometimes arising in the Muladhara chakra and the sexual chakra. And this light would begin to undulate through my body. It literally would take subtle dancing forms. Sometimes it would fill my whole body. Sometimes it would become very powerful in one of the chakras. And I began to recognize this as a visible form, an internal form of the goddess of the mantra and the goddess of the chakra. And what I would find was that when I opened my eyes at the end of a meditation session and looked out at the landscape, my garden and the valley where I live, I would see her there. Her bliss, her sweetness, would literally be dancing in the landscape. And it really was as though the practice itself had changed my vision, had given me, and this is a phrase from the Indian texts, it had unfurnished my eyes and colored them with the lotion of the goddess's bliss. I became, as a result, very dedicated to exploring that experience and taking it as far as I could possibly take it in my practice, with the understanding that the heart of this universe and all its forms really is the lovemaking of Shiva Shakti, of Kameshwari and her consort Kameshwara. So I want to say a little bit, before we begin talking about the yantra, I want to say a little bit about the three names, the three feminine forms in which Lalita is experienced, and also about the fact that she is, in her deepest, most internal form, Lalita Tripura Sundari is Kundalini Shakti. That understanding and the lore of the chakra system that goes along with it is special, let's say. It belongs to the Lalita Tripura Sundari tradition. So these are her forms, and they reveal her at different ages and different stages of growth, and they also describe what happens in the human system when Kundalini becomes active. So the child form of Lalita, she's a 9-year-old girl. 9 is a very important number in this tradition. She's called Bala Lalita, and actually the name Lalita is usually associated with the child form. So she's playful. Lalita means the one who plays. And in her Bala form, Lalita has a mantra, a very powerful mantra, Aim Klim Soha, which will come across in as we continue, because it's also a mantra that we use in this sadhana to install the goddess in our body. So Aim, as most of you know, is a mantra of beginnings, of inspiration. It's all about newness, freshness, creativity. Bala is creation goddess, esoterically, it also expresses the union of Shiva and Shakti, because in Sanskrit language mysticism, the letter A, the vowel A, represents Shiva, while E represents Shakti and the M sound that connects them, which is indicated by a dot or a bindu, a point at the top of the letter, the Sanskrit letter. The M sound represents their union. So Kleem is a mantra of cosmic pleasure, the pleasure arising from Shakti regarding her beloved, or making love to her beloved. Ka is Shiva. La is Shiva. E is Shakti. And Soha is another mantra of creation, very much like Soham, which most of you are aware of. And Soha is another mantra of creation, which is particularly associated with the Trika system of Shaivism, which is what we're usually referring to when we talk about Kashmir Shaivism. We're usually talking about the Trika system. So Bala Lalita, the playful girl form of the goddess, is the ever-fresh inventiveness that's built into the universe and that we could say is the force behind evolution. You know, Alfred North Whitehead, the great 20th century evolutionary philosopher, had this phrase in which he talked about the ever-new emergence, the ever-fresh emergence of novelty, which evolutionary biologists and physicists see this quality of constantly emerging creativity as being built into the universe. It's one of the ways in which modern and postmodern science and tantric and Buddhist traditions understand the universe similarly. So Bala Lalita is the creative advance of novelty, to use Whitehead's term, that is part of Shakti's unique eros. And as she grows into her full youthful beauty, she becomes Shodashi, the 16-year-old. Shodashi means 16. Now, Shodashi is the fertility goddess aspect of Lalita, and she's clearly linked to the experience of early menstruation. So she's the young feminine. She also represents, Shodashi is another name for the full moon, because goddess is, of course, always linked to the fluctuations of the moon. And she's playful, changeable, very much a playful girl. And one of the, you know, the very interesting things about the mythology of the goddess is that when she becomes Shodashi, she begins to long for romance. The little girl is just playing. Shodashi wants a lover. And so in the Shakta tradition, it's said that she creates Shiva. She brings Shiva to life in her heart and unites with him in the heart. So the early connection between Shiva and Shakti, which, again, the symbology of that connection runs all through world religions, you know, the Seal of Solomon, the six-pointed star, which consists of two triangles, an upward-pointing triangle, which is Shiva, and the downward-pointing triangle, which is Shakti. That is one of the forms that we find in the heart chakra. The other thing that's interesting about the connection between all these traditions or all these aspects of Shakta tantricism is that it's said in the Kundalini tradition that when Kundalini Shakti rises to the heart, she takes a goddess form. So in other words, when the energy is flowing in the lower chakras, we don't experience it in a personal way. It actually is opening up the second and third chakras, rooting out the various pieces, types of woundedness misunderstanding that and karmic tendencies that are lodged in these centers. And once it rises into the heart, once she rises into the heart, then she fully takes a form as a goddess. My guru, in his sadhana, in his kundalini-inspired sadhana, which he did completely innocently, he did not have guidance in it, because his guru had initiated him and then kind of left him on his own. One of his very important and powerful experiences was that kundalini in the heart took the form of a goddess and began dancing erotically in his meditation, and which freaked him out. He was a sannyasin, a renunciate. He had no idea why this was happening. He thought it was a problem, which is, of course, one of the things that happens to us when we actually come across or experience inwardly this erotic form of the goddess. It's especially if we've had a conventional spiritual training, we wonder if it's okay. And eventually one of his mentors explained to him that this was not a problem. This was an emanation of goddess. And this is Lalita as goddess Shodashi. So then as she rises, as Kundalini rises, she then becomes Tripura Sundari. She becomes the mature form of the goddess, where she not only commands all these earlier aspects of herself, she also actually becomes the ruler of the universe. She's sometimes called, in the tradition, actually it's one of her main names, she's called Raja Rajeshwari, the queen of the king of kings, the goddess of rulers, the ruler of rulers. You know, it's one other thing about these three forms of the goddess. This class is going to have a lot of details, and one of the things about Tantra is that it's full of details, some of which are sort of TMI, too much information. So I'm trying to give you only those aspects of this information which will help you connect all the parts of your sadhana. Because one of the things about Shakta Tantricism is that it offers us a very, very complete map of all the connections between the higher realms, our own body, our own mind, etc. The Bala Lalita form of the goddess corresponds to an aspect of Kundalini which is generally called Prana Kundalini. In other words, the form of Kundalini which acts as the pranas, as the vital airs. And when Prana Kundalini is awakened, what the awakening of Prana Kundalini is the classical form of Kundalini awakening. In other words, Kundalini awakens at the base of the spine and begins to move through the body using the pranic channels, the nadis, to clear out the body and transform it. So, and when Kundalini rises to the heart and takes the form of Shodashi, the 16-year-old, it transmutes into the form of Kundalini, which is called Chit Kundalini. Chit meaning pure awareness or pure consciousness. And as Chit Kundalini, when Chit Kundalini begins to expand in the heart, this is what brings the capacity for spiritual insight, which changes our priorities, which allows us to recognize in an experiential way, not just, you know, in an intellectual way, what we really are and what goddess really is. So we're looking now at the yantra form of the goddess. And before we begin, and I'm just giving you a moment to take out your pictures if you have them, before we do, let's just spend a moment or two with the mantra in the heart. So you can feel as though the breath is flowing into the heart. Those of you who practice with me a lot know this is one of my favorite ways of breath practice. Imagining that the front of the body is soft or open and that the breath just flows into the heart. See if you can become present to the altar we've created in the heart with the golden floor and the cloth. The flame in a jeweled holder, the water in a jeweled cup, the flowers that you've placed on the altar, the sense of her presence, and just begin to inhale and exhale with the mantra in its invocational form, Om Aim Rim Shrim Lalita Ambikaye Namaha. Lalita Ambikaye Namaha. Om Aim Rim Shrim Lalita Ambikaye Namaha. Let yourself inhale with the Bij mantras, Om Aim Rim Shrim. And then with the exhalation, feel that the altar of your heart is itself Lalita Ambikaye. So that as you inhale, Om Aim Rim Shrim, you exhale with Lalita Ambikaye Namaha, having the feeling that your breath, your attention, and every part of you is bowing into the goddess in the heart. just as mantra is a sound form of the deity, yantra is her subtle visual form. And one of the things that the tantras tell us about mantra and yantra is that they are not representations, they are not symbols, they are goddess. So, and this is something that we can only learn through practice. It's very good to be given this teaching at the beginning of practice because it helps you take it seriously. But again, in my experience with mantra, which I've been practicing for almost 50 years, it takes a while before you realize what the sages are talking about, what they really mean. And the same is true, or perhaps even more true, about yantra. So the Sri Yantra, the Sri Chakra, is a text, actually. It's a scripture. It's filled with teachings. It carries really the emanation or the expression of the entire truth of the tantric understanding about the world. It's a map of how the universe unfolds, and it's also a map of the way back. And of course, this is the core of tantric sadhana. It's like you learn about the unfolding or the creation of the universe, and then you retrace the steps of involution, of the involution of the infinitely subtle into matter, and then you retrace the steps back, which is what in the Indian system is called evolution. It's a little bit different than the Western understanding of evolution. The thing is, as I said earlier, to get it, you have to practice it. But when you practice it, what you discover is that the yantra is psychoactive. It literally changes your consciousness. And to understand what's at the heart of it, you actually need to receive an initiation into the practice and do it. So we're not going to do that here. But what we will do is come to understand it and get a sense of it. I actually feel that a yantra is kind of like a software program with a million hyperlinks. I mean, we understand a lot more about how the subtle realm operates through the understanding of software programs, and especially for me, the idea of hyperlinks has been really, really significant. This understanding that you can just tap on a particular word or picture and it will open up into an entirely other world. That's what a yantra is. It's a succession of hyperlinks, each one of which opens up into a direct experience of goddess. So a yantra is usually described as an instrument or a device that is set up, built to show you to open you to an experience of a particular deity. In the case of the Sri Yantra or the Sri Chakra, it's a yantra of the whole universe. It shows us the matrix, basically, the construction that holds this reality in place, and as well as the path through it, the path that leads out of it. One thing that's we should understand about this practice is that the yantra can be used purely in the process of ascension, where we practice by going from the outer edges of it up to the very center in the Sahasrara. It can also be practiced in the left-hand or Vamachara tradition, in which we ascend and then descend. So the yantra actually gives us a path for entering the highest state of union, and then for descending back into our embodied human state, but filled, imbued with the experience of the union between Shiva and Shakti. So I'm going to explain it from the top down, so to speak, the process of creation, which is called the Srishti Krama. Krama means stage, and Srishti means creation. So the Srishti Krama is the process by which the yantra describes the creation of the universe. The other way to work with it is from the outside in, which is what's called Samhara Krama. So, and this idea of Srishti and Samhara kind of flowing into each other is, again, it's one of the major tantric understandings. And I also want to say that to describe it in full would take a book. And there actually have been several books written, practice manuals that describe the chakra and also describe the practices in it. If you look at the diagram, which hopefully you have in front of you, you see that it's an arrangement of triangles. And looking carefully, you can see that there are two big arrangements of triangles, actually, one of which faces upward and one of which faces downward. There are four of the upward-facing triangles. If you want to see them, look at the bindu in the center. Seeing the yantra, seeing to the heart of the yantra, is very much like looking at one of those paintings, one of those pictures which looks like an abstract design, and when you look at it in a certain way, it reveals that there's something inside it. The yantra does that also. So there are four upward-facing triangles and five downward-facing triangles, which are the two main triangles. And these major triangles express the fact that Shiva and Shakti are completely entwined in the universe. The rest of the yantra is actually formed out of a succession of triangles that are the interfaces between the Shiva and Shakti triangles. And there are 48 of these, 47 of them. And each one of them contains goddesses, powers, teachings, philosophies, and the five pointing downward, the four pointing upward overlap each other and create all these subsidiary triangles. And these are in turn held within an eight-petaled lotus, which is held within a 16-petaled lotus. The lotuses are surrounded by three circular lines, and these are enclosed within four gates, as they're called, of four lines. I'm sorry, the lines of the enclosure, which is called the Bhupura, consists of three lines. And you see the arrangement, if you look at the arrangement, you see that that the enclosure has these four little protrusions on each side, which are the gates. And, of course, in the very center of the Sri Chakra is a dot, the bindu. So the bindu in the center is the absolute union and identity of Shiva Shakti, and the rest of the chakra is their evolution or their involution into the cosmos. And the fact that Shakti is predominant, and also that there are more Shakti triangles, represents the fact that she's dominant in the creation. So every petal of every triangle carries a feminine deity. And these Shaktis, they're sometimes considered part of the retinue or attendants of Shiva Shakti in union. But each one of them carries a gift. Each one of them carries a power. Each one of them has a particular cosmic job. So while the large triangles express the basic tantric truth that Shiva and Shakti are fully present in the manifest universe, the smaller triangles actually represent the different levels of creation, each radiating outward from the central bindu. Now, the Sri Chakra can be mapped onto our body, and it can also be mapped onto the chakra system. The most important thing I feel is that the central triangle and the bindu within it are inside our Sahasrara, the crown chakra just above the head. We're putting up a diagram, a sort of an informal diagram this week, which actually shows the chakras. Shows the arrangements of chakras mapped onto the chakras in the body. So today we're going to meditate on the central triangle and the bindu, which represents the pure transcendent form of Lalita Tripura Sundari, and which is located in the Sahasrara, the topmost chakra, which you'll remember, those of you who've done the courses where we discuss and describe and meditate in the chakras, the Sahasrara can be located in your body, and you might try to locate it now by placing by making fists, excuse me, with both your hands, placing, let's say, the left hand fist, the left-handed fist on top of the crown, and then the right-handed fist on top of that. The Sahasrara is in that space at the top of the second fist. So it's about 8 finger widths above the crown. And in the representations of the goddess, you know, in Indian iconography, goddesses are always shown with crowns. So the Sahasrara is at the top of the goddess's crown. So she's seated as Tripura Sundari in the bindu. She sits on Shiva's left thigh, or perhaps they're actually interpenetrating each other, but the image of Shakti seated on Shiva's thigh is actually a representation of the fact that they're making love. They're in sexual union at the very center of the downward-facing triangle. So the triangle is known as the Kamakala triangle. Kamakala, as we've said earlier, means abode of desire, also abode of bliss. And it is the yoni, the creative yoni, at the heart of the world. And another form of the triangle is at the base of the spine in the Muladhara chakra. And in hardcore tantric kundalini sadhana, well, it's not hardcore, that it's the story that's told in Kundalini Sadhana, which becomes very real for us when we do the Sri Chakra meditation, by the way. In that, so Shakti flows downward from the bindu in the upper triangle, manifesting in the body as all the chakras and eventually coming to rest in the lower triangle in the form of Kundalini, where she rests coiled around a form of Shiva called the Bana Lingam. That's in your Muladhara chakra. And it always feels to me, when I consider this image, is that the goddess, after having created this universe, comes to rest on the bosom of her beloved. And in the tantric traditions out of which Sri Vidya arises, remember, Bala Lalita, the child form, bursts triumphantly out of the Muladhara and enters the Sushumna Nadi, rises up to meet her lover, first in the heart and then in the Sahasrara, and once she's enjoyed making love with him, she descends back to the Muladhara and takes care of the business of life. So the triangle, the Kamakala triangle, is a very complex form because it really holds the primal powers of goddess, the fundamental divine powers. So these powers, you'll remember, are Ichha Shakti, the power of will or desire, Jnana Shakti, the power to know and discern through the process of thinking, and Kriya Shakti, the power to act or to bring what is willed and thought into manifestation. These powers form the sides of the triangles, and so the Shaktis of desire, knowing, and action constantly flow from within the goddess's abode in the Bindu. So also on the sides of the triangle are her powers of creating, sustaining, and dissolving. And these are arranged in a counterclockwise fashion. So the point of the triangle, the bottom of the triangle, is personified as a goddess called Vama, literally she who vomits out the universe and who is the consort of Brahma. Another of her names is Kameshwari. In certain tantric traditions, she's honored as goddess Kameshwari, the goddess of desire, because it's desire, will, that creates the universe. And then moving upward counterclockwise, the point of the triangle, which is associated with the sun, is called Vajreshwari, the lady of the thunderbolt. And she is associated with Vishnu and Lakshmi and with the sustaining of the universe. She's also called Jaisti, which stands for her capacity for sustaining, Jaista. And then the third point is called Bhagalamalini. It's also called Aradri. And she's associated with the process of dissolution and with Shiva in his Rudra form. Vama, or Kameshwari, is associated with the waking state, because that's where manifestation is fully present, fully accessible to the senses. Jaista, or Vajreshwari, is associated with dreaming, which I think is very interesting, because actually, for two reasons. One is that one of the ways that this universe is described is as a dream, specifically as the dream of Vishnu, who is the power of sustenance. So Jaista's association with dreaming indicates that this universe is sustained even in the dream state, and also because it's through the subtle faculties of the mind and intellect that the world is given shape for us. And the dissolution aspect, Bhagalamalini or Radri, is of course associated with deep dreamless sleep in which everything dissolves. And again, beyond all these, surrounding them, encompassing them, holding them, as our own witnessing awareness pervades and surrounds our every experience, is the unseen fourth goddess, who is Tripura Sundari, the beautiful one of the three worlds. And perhaps you understand why she's called Tripura Sundari, that is the three cities, the Tripura, are the three goddesses, the three powers, the waking dream and deep sleep state. So if you want to just take a moment, widen your awareness, so that you become present to the consciousness, the knowingness, the witnessing aspect of your own awareness, which actually is holding your experience. That in you which is present to the flow of experience without itself being touched by the flow of experience. The eternal witness, known in yoga as the Turiya state, the fourth state, which is the state we enter in deep meditation, but which, as you know, we also touch when we begin to become aware of our own awareness. So this is Lalita Tripura Sundari. And Lalita as the all-pervading blissful awareness that is beyond and also holds within herself the knower, the known, and the object of knowledge, which is the way we interact with the world, by knowing objects. Lalita is called Ambika. So when we practice this mantra, Om Aim Rim Shrim Lalita Ambikayai Namaha, we're actually invoking that primal awareness, which is the goddess in the Sahasrara. And you'll also notice, perhaps, that these mantras, Om Aim Rim Shrim, invoke the creative and sustaining aspects of Lalita, actually hiding her destroying aspect, which is contained within these two. So Aim is the creative Shakti, Vama or Kameshwari. Hrim and Shrim are the sustaining Shaktis, the sustaining powers. They both describe the sustaining Shakti, the Vajreshwari or Jeshta aspect. And Lalita Ambikaye points to the meditative absorption in which goddess is imagining the world and maintaining it through her awareness. So the arrangement of triangles, which becomes larger and larger, increasingly diverse, and finally opens into the two sets of lotus petals, the three circles and the square, literally describes the stages through which she produces this cosmos. There are nine triangles, or nine paths, nine avaranas, as they're called in Sanskrit. So for now, let's start with the Bindu, and we'll just take a moment to discuss what the Bindu is, because the Bindu in the Sahasrara is one of the really significant forms that we can approach in meditation. It's a very, very accessible form. And if you remember the way the process of creation is described in the tantras, one of the metaphors, let's say, for the creative process is so similar to the way the universe is described in Big Bang theory that it's really quite uncanny. The universe, it said, flows out of the absolute, first in the form of a vibration, which is called spanda, or nada. It depends on, you know, which sect of Hinduism you belong to, whether you call it spanda or nada. Nada is the sound vibrations, which will eventually become the forms of the Sanskrit alphabet, which is a very, very important aspect of the tantric description of reality. And these vibrations, these wild vibrations, eventually coalesce into the Bindu, the point, which holds all the power that will eventually explode into a cosmos. So, and you know, if you remember the way the Big Bang is described, the newly born universe is said to exist in the form of a tiny, tiny point, which I'm not going to get the math right. It's something like 10 to the 45th power of mass and energy inside this Bindu, which eventually expands to become the physical universe. But the point is that Tantra tells us that the full power within the nascent universe is contained in the Bindu, in our Sahasrara, which is why it's such a powerful symbol is not the right word. It's such a powerful experience when we meet it. My guru described his own visions of the Bindu, which were a very big deal for him, and which he passed on to his students, really as kind of the creme de la creme of the experience of internal divine form. So he described it as a sesame seed-sized point, translucent blue in color, and my experience of it is that it is kind of the blue of it's the blue of a very blue sky. And he said that in his meditation, the dot would arise on its own. And again, many of you have had this experience. Often outside of formal meditation, it would dart in and out of the eyes. And I know people who, I have this experience myself. Sometimes this blue point will appear at a particular moment, just literally hovering in front of me for a fraction of a second before it disappears. And I, like many people, have come to see this vision as a sign that I'm on the right track. I know someone who actually saw this blue dot appearing while she was taking an exam. It would appear in front of the right answers on her multiple choice test. So it's really a very grace-filled vision. So, and what my guru always said about it, speaking from the tantras, is that it is, the Bindu is, he called it the form of God within us. So we're going to do a meditation on the Bindu and the Kamakala triangle. So find a posture. Again, I want to tell you, this is a visual meditation. It's a concentrative meditation. And it works even if you can't do a perfect visualization. But I would like to ask you to make a focused effort to feel the presence of the Kamakala triangle and the Bindu within your Sahasrara. So find the Sahasrara, placing the two fists over your head and just finding the space at the top of the two fists. And then imagine that the breath flows in through the crown, flows in literally as though it's coming from the center of the Sahasrara, which actually it is. And allow the downward flowing breath to settle you in a posture so that your crown gently rises upward, your base settles into the seat, your chest lifts and opens. And as you breathe, have the feeling, this is a technical yogic practice, that you're aiming the inhalation upward. So feel that the breath comes in through your nostrils, flowing upward through the crown, touching into the area of the Sahasrara. And if that feels intense, usually it's because you need to kind of expand your sense of your own boundaries, so that your focus on the Bindu is very, very soft, and your sense of the breath, the inhalation rising and touching this area above the crown, is also very soft. It's almost as though you're inviting the breath to begin to open up this region, which really is there, but is, let's say, covered or occluded by the various karmic impressions and imprints that we've allowed to accumulate there. So imagine now that as the breath flows into this region, imagine the downward pointing triangle. Its three sides are undulating colors, red, blue, and gold. The Bindu is in the center, and the Bindu is a scintillating blue point. Allow yourself to sense its presence. As I said, it's really there. This is a peat, an abode, where Shakti lives in your Sahasrara. The point of blue light, the Bindu, is three-dimensional. It's round. It's sometimes described as the blue pearl. And those of you who are familiar with Jesus's phrase about the pearl of great price, I think we can assume he's talking about the Bindu. So this is the microcosmic form of Shiva and Shakti in union within your subtle body. It's the source of the entire creation as you experience it. In the macrocosm, the Bindu is the source of worlds, and what we're asked to do here is to somehow hold the paradoxical idea that both the macrocosm, the entire cosmos, and your own embodied cosmos are accessible through this point in your Sahasrara. My guru says that at one point in his sadhana, the blue pearl exploded and he saw within it all the worlds, and that's a lot of worlds, because in the tantric tradition, which is what he envisioned, there are said to be over 140 subtle and physical universes. At least that's what he saw in his vision. In the microcosm, that is in you, Shiva and Shakti within the Bindu are constantly creating worlds through the powers of will, knowledge, and action, the three goddesses of the Kamakala triangle. And in your normal state, your ordinary state, those three powers, will, knowledge, and action, operate through the mind and senses to give you the experience of separation. With the awakening of Kundalini, and especially as Kundalini rises to the Sahasrara, these powers of will, knowledge, and action begin to function to show you the play, making apparent what's hidden, clearing the field, and revealing the identity between your inner being and the entire macrocosmos. The breath now just flows into the center of the triangle. And you just let yourself be present there. The sides of the triangle scintillate as the powers of desire, knowing, and activity. And by desire, we mean all those little squibs of restlessness that show up by knowledge, we mean the thoughts. By action, we mean the oscillations, the scintillation of energy that you may experience as your meditation centers here. In the Bindu, Shakti and Shiva make love to each other. Without trying to use these descriptions as reasons to think, just let the breath flow upward and let yourself softly be present inside the Bindu. As I said earlier, it's not a problem if you're not visualizing it exactly. By being present to the sense of the Kamakala triangle and the Bindu in that seat above the fontanelle, you're showing your highest self your willingness, your desire to be shown what you are. So just keep letting the breath flow upward, as it were, knocking on the door of the inner space within the Kamakala triangle and the scintillating point of the Mahabindu. The name of the Bindu, each of the stations in the Sri Chakra, has a name which describes the effect that meditating on it can have of you, on you. So the effect of resting in the Bindu is pervasive bliss. Therefore, the Bindu is called Sarvanandamaya. Sarvanandamaya meaning, Maya means having the form of, Sarva means all, Ananda means bliss. So the Bindu is called that which has the form of every kind of bliss. The triangle is known as the one bestowing affection. I'm sorry, the one bestowing perfection. Sarva Siddhi Maya. Siddhi here meaning perfection or realization. The presiding deity, as we've said, of the inner triangle, which bestows all Siddhi, all perfection, is Mahatripura Sundari. And invisibly ranged around the inside of the triangle, and we're now going to describe the array of Shaktis that form the Sri Chakra, and this is a good moment to look at your diagram. So open your eyes and look at your diagram. Surrounding the Bindu on the insides of the lines of the Kamakala triangle are 16 yoginis or goddesses who are known as the Nityas. Nitya means eternal, and the interesting thing about calling these goddesses Nityas is that they are ever fluctuating. So the Nityas represent the ever fluctuating flow of Shakti in this world, and they also stand for the phases of the moon. So the phases of the moon, which of course are the cycles of nature. But from our point of view, these invisible forces, the Nityas, grouped around your highest consciousness, are the essential powers that begin to give rise to the entire churn, the flow, the ever-changing tumult, really, of reality. And in language mysticism, they're identified with the vowels of the Sanskrit alphabet. So here we are in the Kamakala triangle, aware of the Bindu, recognizing the presence of these 16 Nityas, and we're just describing it here. Remember that in tantric language mysticism, we just said vibration is the essential form of creative Shakti behind the physical world. The letters of the Sanskrit alphabet are the code which contains these creative vibrations. And one of the fundamental truths about this understanding about the creativity of the cosmos is at the core, the heart of all these sounds is the vowels, the 16 vowels. Because without the vowels, without the sounds of the vowels, the consonants could not be pronounced. So this is it's the resonance of the vowel sounds that shaktify the consonants, that shaktify the vibrations that create the world and give them their power. Whereas the consonants actually create structure and differentiation and make it possible for forms to manifest in specific ways. So we're in the Kamakala triangle. We're in the Holy of Holies, the inside of the inside. There's a phrase in Kabbalah, the inside of God's face. This is where we are, in your Sahasrara. We're in the inside of God's face, which is not only the center of the universe, but also the center of your brain. And from this place, Shakti begins to manifest outwardly. So from the rays of the Kamakala triangle in the Sahasrara, mediated through the Nityas, the 16 vowel sounds, the chakra flows outward as a pulsation, as a kind of a ripple into physical manifestation. The first set of rays, which are the inner set of triangles, if you look at the picture, they surround the Kamakala triangle, the central triangle. In my picture, they're colored red, and I believe they're kind of a golden color in the one you're looking at. This configuration of eight small triangles is called the Vasukona. The Vasukona consists of eight yoginis, eight powers, which are the deities of language. They're called the Vag Devatas, the language goddesses, the speech goddesses. And they are the originators, they're the powers, they're the governors that give us the capacity to experience life. They're associated with the psychic instruments, with the buddhi, the mind, the ego. And here are their names. I want to give you their names because their names are very evocative. They're called Vasini, she who is made of thought forms, vasanas. Kameshwari, here's her name again. Kameshwari actually is in every one of these arrays of triangles. Kameshwari, she who rules all forms of allurement. Modini, the one arrayed. Vimala, the pure one. Aruna, the fiery one. Jayani, triumphant, who lives in the Sarveshwari, the goddess, the ruler of all, and Kalini, who is the community of elements. And these shaktis, these yoginis, because they are described as yoginis, as goddesses, create the capacity for experience that are the instruments through which we live and that allow the primal goddess to interact with her own dream of the universe. And in the process of creation, the process of manifestation, they are the source of our experience of separation. In other words, goddess creates this experience of separation through these eight yoginis, these eight shaktis. So they're the filter through which the entirety of experience is seen, named, and felt. So this group of triangles maps onto the Ajna Chakra, which is the seat of our individual perceptions. Now, emanating from this inner triangle, this inner arrangement, the eight Vasukona triangles are two groups of 10 triangles. And each one of these triangles, again, is a form of a particular goddess or a yogini. So the inner set of 10 triangles includes the powers within the elements, that is earth, water, fire, air, and ether, as well as the qualities that allow us to experience them, that is fragrance, which goes with earth, taste, which goes with water, form or sight, which goes with fire, touch, which goes with air, and sound, which goes with ether or space. These yoginis, these energies, actually create the, let's call them the substance, out of which the world we experience will be built. It's all made of these five elements, these five subtle elements. So they're secret, they're hidden, they're behind the scenes. In other words, these subtle elements and the abilities to experience them are unseen by our outward focused senses, but they are going to create the senses as well as whatever we experience through the senses. And so when we look at the chakras as a map of creation, we could say that these goddesses are in charge of the blueprint of reality. But when we take the reverse path, when we come backward, these yoginis are said to confer particular gifts on us as we contact them through the ritual. So these yoginis have names like Sarvajna Devi, the omniscient one, Sarva Shakti Devi, the one who contains all powers, Sarveshwaraya Prada, she who empowers and rules all, Sarva Jnana Maya, she's the form of all knowledge. I'm saying these names because they evoke something in us. They show us something about what Shakti actually is able to produce in us as we go through this process. So the other goddesses in this configuration are, I'm not going to give you their Sanskrit names, the one who destroys disease, she who takes the form of the inner core of all chakras, the one who removes sins, the one who gives all bliss, the form of protection, the one who grants desired fruits in the practice. And these powers, which we'll see in all the levels of the chakra, are the fundamental powers that we seek from Shakti. We want all forms of empowerment, all forms of knowledge, all forms of joy. We want our sins removed. We want all bliss. And these goddesses map onto the area around the palate, which is a chakra called the Talu chakra, and which we could say is the seat of our sense organs, smell, taste, touch, hearing, and sight. You know, and again, when you pray to the goddess, when you ask for something, when you ask for help, when you do an affirmative prayer practice, she hears and answers from inside your own awareness, which is her form and contains all her power. So this is what these triangles and the map of the yoginis, the powers within us, within the Sri Chakra, are meant to show us. This is not just a painting. And I want you to let your mind be blown by this. What this form is showing us is the fact that all powers are inside us. So the next set of triangles, which is also 10, are the radiation which comes from these goddesses of the elements. And they are associated with the 10 vital breaths, the pranas, prana, apana, samana, dhyana, and the others, which are the pranas, which are active, you know, prana moves. The pranas are usually described as rays that connect the hidden shaktis that govern physical reality and allow them to act creatively to make a universe. And it's said in the tantras that as consciousness involves itself in the process of making a universe, the first step is to become prana. So prana is a very, very direct form of creative Shakti. And again, in the path of worship and meditation, the path that leads up from the outside to the inside of the yantra, mastering this configuration means that you have become a master of the pranic deities who, again, confer specific powers, siddhis, on an adept who reaches this stage of practice, meaning that they come to one whose sadhana is comfortably established in these upper chakras. And some of these, when your prana expands, in meditation, it actually becomes quite easy to experience yourself as vast, as having a huge body. That in deep meditation can actually expand to reveal that everything is inside it. And when a guru gives you initiation, she does it by injecting her prana or his prana through his or her breath, which then infuses your pranas with the guru's state. So the powers that come online when you practice this sadhana include the Shakti, which gives you all power, all profit, all results, gives you the power to see everyone with the eyes of love. That's a nice one. Gives you a vision that sees auspiciousness everywhere, which again is a very practical gift. It fulfills all desires, removes all suffering, removes obstacles, imparts beauty and prosperity to every aspect of your life. And again, Sri Vidya ritual practice specifically promises that these powers will arise naturally as you become more and more identified with the subtle qualities of the chakra and more awake to the deities and yoginis who reside there. And I want to say that these unfolding empowerments also come to you through the mantra. So the Sri Vidya ritual, which is extremely powerful and extremely transformative, which requires a lot of training and a lot of focus and also takes a couple of hours. I'm telling you this because I know that I find that as I consider and contemplate the chakra, it makes me want to go out and learn the puja and practice it every day, or at least weekly. And that's something that, you know, is an extremely profound thing to do. And what I want to say is that the effects of the ritual are also in the mantra. So if you can really give yourself to the mantra practice, it will give you all of this. So the next set of chakras are connected to the next group of triangles, which number 14, are connected to the Vishuddha chakra. They are also considered to correspond to the 14 principal nadis, the channels, similar to the meridian channels through which life force flows. And each one of them contains their own empowerments. So the yoginis in the 14 triangle array both give you gifts and also protect you from obstacles. So they have names, but they're also very, very active powers, and they're powers that begin to come online for us as awakened kundalini flows through the nadis. One of them is called Sarva-Sankshobini Shakti, which has the power to make everything and everyone restless and volatile. Sarva-Vidravini Shakti, the Shakti that disperses obstructions. Sarva-Karshini Shakti, the power to attract everyone. Sarva-Ladini Shakti, the power to create, Sarva-Ladini Shakti, the power to create delight. Sarva-Mohini, the power of confusing. And again, these are specific Shaktis, yoginis, that are manifesting through our subtle bodies, creating our unconscious experience. So confusion, various obstructions, restlessness, volatility, all of these experiences which we have in the course of daily life, that the Shakti, that the Tantra tells us, are the result of the activity of these yoginis. And once we become sensitive and focused enough to feel into and open into these nadis, these powers begin to act for us rather than acting through us unconsciously. And I'll tell you what I mean by this. So, for example, the protective Shakti, which in ordinary life might create walls of, you know, walls of fear and contraction, actually become powers that allow us to feel protected even while we act freely without contraction. The powers of attraction, which in our unawakened state, especially when we're young and pretty, can often cause us to be, may have drawn predators to us. I mean, I would say that the Me Too movement is actually an expression of resistance to this fact that has been true throughout, you know, all of creation, which is that a being who is attractive draws towards herself or himself those who want to make use of her for their own purposes. So all of these powers, in there, when the Shakti is simply moving outward, are aspects which create our suffering. And, you know, they control our karmas, they create our personality structure. They may draw different types of trauma to us or express themselves in ways that make us attractive to trauma. Once they're awakened, these yoginis become powers that allow helpful forces to flow towards us from every part of the universe. So, in other words, these Shaktis become our natural superpowers that allow us to act auspiciously in the world and also to benefit us and others. They empower our inner lives, and they empower our interfaces with the environment. And this, the process of worshiping the yoginis in the Sri Chakra, are a very refined form of ritual play that actually serves to self-activate us. So surrounding the 14 triangles are two circles of lotus petals, one with 8 petals and one of 16. So and these lotuses are, they kind of control the experience that we often have when we first step onto the spiritual path. So the yoginis of the 8 petals are said to be, they're said to be limbless, which means essentially that they're spontaneous. They act without having bodies. And they hold powers like limitless delight, love, limitless energy, limitless beauty. The yoginis of the 16 lotus petals hold the power to attract whatever is desired, whether it's more intelligence, more courage, you know, more beautiful forms. This outer configuration of lotus petals, actually the 16 lotus petals, contain siddhis, powers that, as we activate them, begin to attract from outside specific gifts that make life desirable. In other words, if you want money, the powers, the yoginis in the 16 petal lotus will bring you money. If you want a boyfriend or a girlfriend, the yoginis in the lotus petals can draw that to you. So what I notice here as I contemplate the chakra is that the farther out from the center a particular configuration is, the more, so to speak, exterior are the gifts. So the deities on these 16 petals seem to be particularly concerned with augmenting or empowering our worldly life. And, you know, we say that that in Tantra says that this path gives both bhukti and mukti, both worldly pleasure and liberation. And the worldly pleasure part are held in these outermost lotuses and in the circles and squares. And in the process of creation, let me back up a minute. So I think all of us are quite familiar with New Thought, the law of attraction. You know, the various Western traditions that, you know, that especially in the United States, these are very American traditions, where we use our powers of will and thought to manifest good lives for ourselves. In Tantra, these gifts come about naturally through our devotional practice. In other words, when you do these goddess-centered practices, she showers these gifts on us. It's true that before she showers us with gifts, we often have the experience of things being taken away in our life. And we'll talk about this a little bit more next week. But the thing here is that the sense of having things taken away or removed are actually a part of the process by which Goddess makes us ready to receive the fullness of what she wants to offer us. So the outer circles and the squares represent the physical world, the concrete objects of sense, of the, you know, the so-called sense objects, and the actual, you know, trees and floors and walls and physical bodies through which we experience the world and which we experience as the world. So in these powers, in these circles, the powers in the three circles are not usually described in the text, but the powers of the outer bhupala, the gates, the square that surrounds the chakra, include the classical siddhis, the supernatural powers which are described in the Yoga Sutras, which include the ability to make yourself so heavy that no one can lift you, the power to control people, the power of unstoppable will, the power both to experience what you desire and also to eliminate desires. One of the siddhis that Patanjali speaks of is the power to, you know, conquer hunger and thirst. So in the yoga traditions, these siddhis are acquired through explicit practices and focus. The Yoga Sutras actually give you the practices that give you these siddhis. For instance, meditation on the root of the tongue is supposed to eliminate hunger and thirst. Certain pranayamas make your body light enough to fly. The tantras are very interested in siddhis, in powers. It's one of the reasons why people practice in goddess, who do goddess practice in India. It's for the sake of acquiring powers. And there, it's said, this is what my guru used to say, which is very much a part of the tradition. He said that to practice for the sake of acquiring powers is basically screwed up. You know, it's a way of keeping yourself outwardly focused. However, for a practitioner who has realized the truth, or who is on the path to realizing the truth, these powers come naturally as gifts of the goddess. And certain teachers, like Sai Baba of Shirdi, very famously, my Param Guru, Bhagwan Nityananda, had hosts of siddhis. It was often, Nityananda was often depicted as being surrounded by goddesses who represent these powers, which he used freely for helping people. And there are many, many stories about both Sai Baba, Bhagwan Nityananda, and other gurus of Siddha traditions. Siddhas, both in Hinduism and Buddhism, are realized beings who have full access to all the powers of the chakras. So, in other words, a being whose kundalini has fully risen and permeated his or her entire being can call on goddess in all these ways. And they can change the circumstances of people's lives. They can take away your karmic obstructions, et cetera. And we ourselves, as we cultivate our inner being, actually find that these abilities begin to come online. And what the tantras tell us, and it's very important, before you start to have siddhis, you go, oh my God, this is like whatever. But once you start to experience siddhis, and many of you have already, and all of you who practice seriously will in the future, it's very important to remember that using your siddhis for personal gain, even in the service of others, if you're doing it with the feeling that you're the doer of it, you know, that you have been given this gift which you are now going to use, and which in some part of yourself you are owning and expecting to be praised for, this is not good for your practice. It actually creates an obstacle or a block which needs to be overcome. Just saying. My guru used to tell a story about friend. My guru was very interested in siddhis himself, especially during his sadhana days. And he used to tell a story about a friend of his who had a siddhi through which he could make objects disappear from one place and show up somewhere else. And he used it to steal from other people's houses. And I personally have met a man who had a siddhi that he could touch you between the eyebrows and you would see lights. Actually, you would see the blue pearl. It happened every time. And it was almost a mechanical power, which he used to attract people who were looking for yogic experiences. But in fact, all he had was this particular ability to make you see the bindu. So one of the reasons why the Sri Vidya ritual and the Sri Vidya mantra was kept secret for such a long time, and why even now it requires initiation, is partly because worshipping Shakti in this way does bring forth powers. And for that reason, we want to have fully self-reflected and to continue the process of self-reflection as we do these practices. Because siddhis do come, abilities do come, and we just want to make sure that we're being uplifted by them rather than using them for worldly purposes. So this is something that some of us, I'm one of those people, many of us today are people who have been on this path for a long time, who may have in the past misused or not understood the Shakti, the powers that Shakti unfold in us, and made a mistake of some kind, which in this lifetime often shows up as a kind of karmic obstruction. You know, for many people, it's the obstruction is a kind of a distrust of our own power. For others, it's other things, but not, you know, it's one of the ways, it's one of the kinds of issues that can come up on the spiritual path as we thread this path of refining our energies, because that's really what tantric sadhana is. It's really a process of refining our energies and allowing the energies of the senses, the energies of the mind, the energies of awareness, the energies of love, the energies of, you know, of vitality, to refine our experience of them, to allow them to become divinized by our mantra practice, by our worship practice. And I'm going to give you a simple ritual to perform this week, which also involves the purification of your own instrument. The rituals and the mantras and the meditation practice, which of course have many, many, many gifts to give us, ultimately what they do is they refine our instrument such that as we become more and more able to follow the process of Kundalini unfolding in our body, opening the chakras, touching into the Bindu and the Kamakala triangle and the Sahasrara, we become more and more able to be stable in our self-recognition. So we're going to end here. We're a little bit over time. And I'd like to ask you to return to the practice that we were doing earlier, finding yourself in the region above the Sahasrara. Finding the flashing, multicolored, infinitely subtle Kamakala triangle with its point facing downward, manifesting as a goddess Kameshwari. And the Bindu in the center, which is the source of everything, and which holds the blissful union of Shiva and Shakti. Let yourself touch into that power within your Sahasrara. And then with the next inhalation, feel that you draw that Shakti, that power, that feeling state, the expansion that arises when you meditate above the Sahasrara, feel that you draw it down. Draw it down through the head, through the neck. Feel that power infusing your shoulders, your upper back, your chest, your heart and lungs, flowing down through your stomach, through all the organs of the abdomen, flowing through your sexual organs, your intestines, your bladder, definitely your kidneys, flowing through your hip joints, your thighs, your knees, and down to your feet. Feel that the entire panoply of Shaktis in the Sri Chakra is manifesting as your embodied self through this beautiful body which we've been given, which we've given ourselves in order to experience Goddess as this world. And please sit for a few minutes and just let yourself be embodied in presence, in Goddess, as Goddess, in love. Have a beautiful evening, a beautiful week. This call will be available tomorrow, and I will also be sending out a homework assignment and a meditation audio. So much love. Namaste.